example, know that the world doesn't end at Tvardogora either. That beyond it is Oleshnitsa, Brzeg, Niemotlin, Nisa, Gubchitsa, Opava, Novyitsin, Trenčín, Nitra, Estragom, Buda, Belgrade, Ragusa, Ioannina, Corinth, Crete, Alexandria, Cairo, Memphis, Ptolemais, Thebes. Well, isn't the world growing? Doesn't it become ever larger? Yet that still is not the end. Going beyond Thebes, up the Nile, which issues from its source in the Garden of Eden as the river Gihon, we come to the lands of the Ethiops, and thence, as we know, to barren Nubia, sun-baked Kush, gold-bearing Ophir, and the whole of the vast Africa Terra Hixunt Leones. And beyond that is the ocean that surrounds all the earth. But in that ocean, of course, are islands like Cathay, Taprobana, Bragine, Oxidrate, Ginosophy, and Zipangu, where the climate is wonderfully fertile and jewels lie around in heaps, as described by the scholar Hugh of St. Victor and Pierre Dailly, and also by Sir John Mandeville, who saw those marvels with his own eyes. Thus we have proved that over the course of those few centuries the world has grown markedly. For even if the world hasn't increased in terms of matter, the number of new names certainly has. How then, you ask, can we reconcile the claim that the world has also shrunk? I shall tell you, and prove it. I only entreat you first not to mock or jibe, for what I shall say isn't a figment of my imagination, but knowledge gleaned from books. And it doesn't do to mock books, since their writing is the result of somebody's arduous labour. As we know, our world is a small piece of land, shaped like a round pancake, with its centre in Jerusalem, and all engirdled by the ocean. At the occident, the edge of the earth is formed by Calpe and Abila, the pillars of Hercules, with the Strait of Gades between them. And to the south, as I have just said, the ocean extends beyond Africa. In the southeast, the end of the mainland is marked by India Inferior, which belongs to Prester John, as well as the lands of Gog and Magog. In the septentrional of the earth is Ultima Thule, and there, ubi oriens jungitur Aquiloni, lies the land of the Mongols, or Tartary, while to the east the world ends somewhere beyond Kiev, with the Caucasus. And now we come to the crux of the matter, by which I mean the Portuguese. But more specifically, the Infante Dom Henrique, Duke of Viseu, the son of King John. Portugal, it can't be denied, is by no means a large kingdom, and the king's infant was his third son in a row. So, unsurprisingly, Henry gazed more often and with greater hope from his palace in Sagres towards the sea than at Lisbon. He invited to Sagres astronomers and cartographers, wise Jews, navigators, sea captains and master boat builders. And thus it began. In the year of our Lord, 1418, the explorer, João Gonçalves Jaco, reached some islands called the Insuli Canarii, so called because of the vast multitudes of dogs found there. Soon afterwards, in 1420, the same Gonçalves Jaco and Tristão Vaz de Serra sailed to the island christened Madeira. In 1427, the caravels of Diogo de Silves reached some islands which were named the Azores. Only God and Diogo knew why. But a few years ago, in 1434, another Portuguese, Gil Yanes, rounded Cape Bojador, and rumour has it that Infante Dom Henrique, who some are now beginning to call El Navegador, or the Navigator, is planning his next expedition. Truly do I admire those seafaring explorers and hold them in great esteem. They are intrepid men. After all, it is terrifying to venture onto the ocean under sail. Why, there are squalls and storms, hidden rocks, magnetic mountains, rough and sticky seas. If there aren't whirlpools, then there's turbulence, and if